sort of carry on looking at the story of Joseph in a very light way this morning, really, because what I intended to do didn't turn out how I intended it, so we won't actually get that far in, well, we won't get any further in the story of Joseph, to be honest, but God sort of turned it around to something different. So I'm going to read chapter, in fact we'll read around chapter 42 of Genesis, and from verse 1 to verse 24, please. I'll start us off, and then we'll read around this morning. So we're going to read from Genesis 42 and verse 1 to verse 24. When Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob says to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. So go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die." So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. Verse 4.
But Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, to the others, because he was afraid that harm might come to him. So Israel's sons were among those who went to buy grain. The famine was in the land of Jacob. Joseph was the governor of the land, the person who sold grain to the woman's people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he asked. "From the land of Canaan." Joseph recognized his brother. They did not recognize him. "Then he said to them, 'Your spies, you have come to see where our land is to be protected.'"
"Oh, my Lord," he answered, "your servants have come to help you. You are all the city of God. Your servants have come to you."
He said to them, "You have come to see where our land was unprotected." But they replied, "Your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man, who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now without father, and one is no more."
"This next one, another, surely we will finish with us our brother. He saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but he did not listen. That's why the distress was put on us."
Joseph replied, "If I told him not to turn against the Lord, that he would have listened, now he has seen the account of his voice. He did not realize his words were put on his back. He turned away from him, without belief, but then came back and spoke to him again. He had similar faith in front of him, down to the ground."
Thank you. When I was, I quite think about my sermons for quite a long time, and then quite often I don't write them while the day that I'm doing them, which is what I did this morning, got up early and wrote this sermon, and I'd thought about five or six points from probably half of what we read today that I thought that were relevant points to do with sort of the character of Joseph and the guilt that his brothers felt and all those sorts of things. When I actually started writing the sermon down, all of that changed. I only got I thought of a point which I would bring to introduce it, and that's as far as I got. So this morning you're getting a one-point sermon. They said to sort of do a three-point sermon or a five-point sermon, because then you've got something in the middle, you know, when you build up and then build back down. But this morning it's 1 point. So hopefully that will help you to remember something of what's said this morning. I want to ask you a question this morning, and it'll test your memory a little bit. You might remember it, you might not, depends how your humour works. Where are pies weighed? I've asked you this before. You might remember, you might not. Where are pies weighed? Weighed. Could be, yeah. Think of the song, "Somewhere Over the Rainbow, Weigh a Pie." I've asked you before, I thought you might remember, but obviously not. That's pretty much irrelevant to my sermon, but what I wanted to, it ain't totally irrelevant, because where I started with this sermon was that I wanted to talk about, I wanted to use "Somewhere Over the Rainbow" as my title, because if you remember the song, it says, "Somewhere over the rainbow, there is a place where dreams really do come true." And the series is all about the dream, isn't it? And the dream coming true. So that's where I started out, but as you'll see as we go, sort of it didn't end up like that. On that line, at this time, no one was eating pies over the whole world, were they? Maybe the people in Egypt might have had some pies, but no one else had there. The famine had set in, and food was scarce, wasn't it? People were dying from hunger and making massive journeys to try and get food from Egypt. You know, from all over the world, they were trailing in, you know, in massive convoys to Egypt to try and find food. They were desperate. People were dying of starvation. And now, as I mentioned last time, as we read chapter 42, verse 1 to 6, part of Joseph's family had made that massive journey to go and buy food from the Egyptians. And if you think about when you go to the supermarket, I've been to the supermarket, and some things, some days are on special offer. I've been to the supermarket sometimes when beans, when baked beans, have been 8 pence. A tin of baked beans has been 8 pence. How could anyone actually produce a tin of baked beans, and the tin must cost more than 8 pence? But they've been 8 pence. If you could imagine that a famine suddenly came in our land, what worth would be that tin of baked beans? Baked bean tin had been bought for 8 pence, as we could have done if we'd have been in that place. But then if sudden famine came on this land and we were starving for food, how much would that baked bean tin be worth? It would be priceless, wouldn't it? It would be worth, you would gladly give all your gold and silver and your money that you got for something to eat, because you can't eat money, you can't eat gold, can you? And even though you might seem, that might seem quite dramatic, that's the situation that some of these people were in. You know, they got money, they might even have got gold, they might have got lands, but they had no food. And things and grain, something which was the basic food of life, which people could have grown at once in their own yards, no longer grew. They were desperate. At this stage in the story, if you like, Egypt had all the beans, and Joseph was the bean keeper. Well, as you know, it was really grain. But now, grain has been exchanged for gold. You know, grain was worth more than gold. That's how desperate people were. You can't eat gold. As we see, Jacob sends his brothers to Egypt to try and buy food. And I'm not going to read it again, but from verse 1 to verse 6, he asks them why they're looking at each other, saying, "We haven't got any food," when they should be off to Egypt. And he sends them off, don't he? We know the story. First of all, what I thought about was, when you think about this process of people coming to Egypt to buy food, did everyone have to come before Joseph who wanted food? Think about that. These are things for you to think about. If they did, then this would make Joseph an exceedingly busy man, because the whole world was starving. You'll see where I'm going with this point in a minute. If they had got to come before him, everyone who wanted grain or food, then millions and millions of people must have come before him in a matter of weeks, you know, when this famine started to bite. If you think about it from a logical point of view, Joseph was the top man. He had a lot of people under him. Maybe Joseph had people who worked with him to sift through the backlog of people that wanted food. You know, he had 20 men, 40 men, 50 men, women, whatever. You know, and they would come to them and say, this is why I need food. And they would do it. Thinking about Joseph's brothers then come in. Was it coincidence that Joseph's brothers ended up before Joseph? I am certain that Joseph could not have said yes to everyone that was coming for grain. He wouldn't have had enough time. So is it coincidence that Joseph's brothers ended up before Joseph? It's no coincidence, I don't think, is it? It's what we've talked about before. It's a God instance. You know, God, it was all in God's plan. It didn't matter if he did have 100 people providing grain. There was always going to come before Joseph, because that's how God had planned it. As the song says, somewhere over the rainbow there is a place where dreams really do come true. But God controls the rainbows, and God causes the dreams to come true when the time is right, in his time and in his way. And all of this was in the plan. As we looked at last time, after 20 years, it was time for Joseph's dream to start coming true. And as I was writing this morning, I came to my first point. As I've told you, it's going to be the only point this morning. I thought there was going to be more, but it didn't work out like that. My first point this morning is that God uses dreamers. And the question that I want to ask this morning, and we're going to look at a little bit more in depth, and it strays from the story of Joseph somewhat, but why did God choose Joseph? 17-year-old dreamer. Out of all the people that were alive at that time, there would have been some great and awesome people, some mighty administrators, you know, some people that were already qualified, you know, in what God was going to need someone to do. Why did God choose a 17-year-old dreamer? Why did God choose Joseph? Joseph was a great preacher. He won't worry. Or maybe a miracle working hero of the Old Testament. He's not even that, is he? In fact, I just want to read you something from chapter 37. You don't need to turn to this because it's only one verse. This is from chapter 37 and verse 1 and verse 2. This is sort of the first real mentioning of Joseph. And look what he's doing. Now Joseph dwelt in the land Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. What did Joseph do there? He grasped on his brothers. He squealed, didn't he? As we'd say in these days. He was a squealer. He was someone who, if you like, sold out on his own brothers. Not in a bad way. We might have done the same if we'd have saw something going off what we didn't like. But he went back to his father and he told his father. Why did God choose Joseph? As we look at that stage in his life, I can't see anything what would make him desirable to God to use. Firstly, the reason why God chose Joseph was because God sees the potential in Joseph. God sees what other people couldn't see. God sees what we couldn't see at that stage in the story of Joseph's life. God knows the past and the present and the future. God even knows, and it says in his word, that he knows what we will do even before we do it. Just going to read you a couple of verses from 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And I'm going to read verse 26 to 29. This is what it says. For you see your calling, brothers, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world, and the things which are despised, God has chosen, and the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. What does this tell us about who God chooses and why? First of all, that it tells me that God chooses the weak. Why? Because the weak have to rely on God. You know, they can't do it themselves, we can't do it ourselves. Secondly, God chooses the foolish. Now, if you wanted something good doing, the last person that you would choose is someone that you considered foolish, wouldn't it? God chooses the foolish. I'm not saying you're foolish this morning, by the way. No, if God chooses us, but why does God choose the foolish? Because they have to look to him for wisdom. God chooses the fearful because they have to look to him for their peace and for their strength. God chooses the dreamers because they have a passion and a dream and a vision. If you think about Joseph at that time, he fulfilled all that criteria. He was weak, he was quite foolish, you know, he was probably fearful, and he was a dreamer. If you think about those things, we too probably fulfill the criteria of those four things. Let me say it in another way. Are you weak? Are you foolish? Are you fearful? Be honest. Most of the time we probably are, aren't we? Well then, you are a good choice for God. Because that is what God looks for. That is what God chooses. That is what God can use. Then what happens is that God gives a dream, an idea, a vision, a glimpse of what he wants us to do. And our reaction is, I can't do that. And then just like the Moses story, we go through what I call the pantomime process of, oh yes you can, oh no I can't. And God says, oh yes you can. And so I go, oh no, I can't. If you think about it, when God told Joseph to go to Egypt and stand before Pharaoh and demand that Pharaoh let God's people go, what did Moses say? He suddenly started stammering and stuttering and said, Lord, I can't go. Lord, I have nothing. Lord, I'm not a good man. Lord, I'm not a mighty man. God says to him, trust in me, use what you've got in your hand. you know, and I'll do it. God said, oh yes, you can. And that's God's reply to anyone this morning, to everyone this morning who says that they can't do what God has called them to do. When Joseph was that 17-year-old foolish lad, if God told Joseph everything that was going to happen before that dream could come true, what would Joseph have done and what would Joseph have said? I should imagine it would have gone something like, no way, I ain't going, I'm not doing it, I'm not even going to interpret the dream. In the same way, if God showed you and me everything that was going to needed to happen before your God-given dreams come true, what would you or me most likely do or say? Probably no way. No, I'm not. It's not worth going through that. That's because we don't know the outcome. We don't know the end. That is why we only know in part now, and it will always be like that. God never reveals a full plan to anybody. I'm not bothered who they are. You know, it gives you a glimpse. It gives you a start. It gives you something to get you going, if you like. We'll only know in part. We only know in part because it keeps us looking for Him, doesn't it? It keeps us looking towards Him for the rest. Why did He choose Joseph? And why did He choose you and me? Well, because we are weak and foolish and fearful and dreamers, but with potential that God can see and develop. And the more we say we can't, the more God says, you can. And He says, trust in me and use what I show you and what I give you. Fix your eyes on me. And this morning, as I said, I intended to get a lot further in the story of Joseph's dream, you know, and how that was going to all pan out. But sort of God stopped me in my tracks after this one point of who God chooses and why. And our reaction, and Joseph's reaction to God's calling on his life. We'll end this sermon quite abruptly this morning because I realise that there are people that need prayer this morning in this area. Not because I know, but you know, because of what it is, because what God has shown me. People were struggling with the calling of God on their lives. People may be struggling and wrestling with the call and dream God has clearly placed on their lives and our lives. I'm one of those people, but I know that there is a lot more here. I want to read you another one verse from 2 Corinthians. Probably the most significant thing that you'll hear this morning. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And I'm going to read verse 9. Listen carefully to these words and let these words sink in. And let these words change things in our lives this morning. Let faith arise in the dream God has given us. And he said to me, my faith is sufficient for you, and my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Who said these words? Who said them? They're actually words of Jesus, interpreted by Paul. But some of the words, "My grace is sufficient for you, my strength is made perfect in weakness," are words of Jesus. My grace is sufficient for you, His grace is sufficient for me. His strength is made perfect in your weakness, and His strength is made perfect in my weakness. And as we realise that, then the last part of that verse comes into play. The power of Christ rests on us. Three questions this morning, all on this same point. Are you feeling insufficient this morning for the things that God has called you to do? Are you feeling weak? Are you in need of that power of Christ to rest on you? And this morning, I'm going to ask you to take a step of faith and come out. Not stay in your chair, but stand there, maybe in the aisle or up here at the front. And the pastors and elders will pray for you, or if you are a pastor and elder, then we'll pray for each other. I'll pray for you and you can pray for me, or whatever. We'll pray for each other. Do it now.